You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure. New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Andy Liu, 9 months and 2 days. That's how long it had been between Warriors games. Can you believe it? We're officially back.
I'm going to say it was 19 months and 2 days because I don't count last season. That was as great as a first preseason game as I could have hoped for. I texted you this morning at like, I don't know, whatever time I woke up, just genuinely happy, Sam. I am just happy. Not just because the Warriors are back, because they looked fun to watch and they looked like a good basketball team.
Yeah, I was wondering if you like had just started taking like a massive dose of Prozac or something. You sounded so giddy. I was, dude. I mean, I want to start with this. It's just, we're so used to the Warriors playing like 9 months because between the finals going all the way to mid-June and the season starting, it's like you never had a break. And then one, last season sucked because the injuries and everything. And then two, the COVID break, it felt like I have not been this excited for a first preseason game probably ever. I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I always get excited when they start, but like just the sheer amount of time we went without seeing Steph Curry dribble a basketball.
I would say this was one of the most anticipated because like, I don't even count like 14, 15 that preseason because it was like, well, we got Steve Kerr. But you know, like, don't really know what he's going to do. You don't know if he's good or not.
You're a little curious, but there wasn't like anticipation.
They weren't a championship team. Like, we didn't really think they were, right? Like, they were a second round out. So we're like, okay, like, we'll see. We kind of know where they are. They might have maxed it out. And then like the KD stuff, yeah, it was high anticipation, but it's like, does it really matter? Because we're really waiting for the postseason with KD, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was cool to see KD's first preseason game, but like, I didn't need to see them in preseason. Like,
I didn't. I needed to see Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre and Brandon Wanamaker. I needed to see – I mean, I wish we could have seen Wiseman, but, like, I love
you
seeing
– You mean Igu Wanamaker? Or?
Two strips? I mean, even your boy Smiley had a strip, or he had, like, a rip.
He also got blocked at the dunk three times. Hey, but, God.
Happy things only. Happy things only. Come on.
So let's talk about that. First preseason game. I mean – So let's be real. I don't think we learned anything we weren't anticipating. We just kind of saw some things we wanted to see. So like we kind of thought this team had the potential to be a really good athletic defensive team. And just seeing game one in the preseason, like the first thing that popped to me is like those dudes went hard, right? And Denver clearly did not go as hard, but Denver also played in the bubble till basically October 1st. Yep. The Warriors look like a team who's like, we're not messing around. We don't have four all-stars, Hall of Famers. We need to play possessions hard. And you know what I saw? I was like, yeah, dude, they can score a lot in transition if they just defend.
Yep. The defensive stuff was interesting because it wasn't like I didn't feel like Steve Kerr kept saying they were a top 10 defense. I didn't feel like this team was like complete lockdown, but love the athleticism because we talked about it all offseason. And then you see Oubre get beat or you see Oubre coming down weak side for a block, right? You see Eric Paschal push around Millsap. Like he wasn't a guy that was getting bullied. You see Andrew Wiggins like stay in front of players. It was kind of everything that
you see. You saw Steph body up Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray, that was
like
fun.
He was a little. You could just tell he was like, dude, it's been way too long. I'm just hyped to play. I think a positive to take from that was Draymond didn't play. Pretty much the last couple of years, last year, I mean, if Draymond wasn't on the floor, it was like a layup line. It's just terrible, you know? Like, the fact that they can be competent, not perfect, but competent defensively without Draymond, it's just a small sample. But, like, Oubre used his length well. Oubre had three blocks. Did you know that? I think a couple of them might have been steals, and they count him as blocks, but it doesn't matter. Disruptive play either way, right?
Yeah, he had a lot of weeks. It was KD, reminiscent of KD, kind of the right. Weak side stuff was fantastic.
And then, like, I mean, Wiggins was getting into it defensively. I thought he was probably not as good as Oubre, but whatever. No. Paschal's clearly got better defensively, yes. At least in man coverage. Weak side still, you know, probably a work in progress, but that's kind of the last thing guys figure out anyway.
It was fun. Kevon Looney, let's throw him out there. Kevon Looney looked solid. He looked as healthy because, like, we don't expect him to take a leap, right? Like, that's not what we want to see.
I mean, it'd be nice if he just became a 40% three-point shooter.
You're right. If he does, he does. But our thing here, as we talked about, is that how is he going to look on the floor? Is he healthy? And I think that was as good as you can get for someone like Looney. Never felt that way last season.
Was it Gary Harris who just drove into him and fell over, or was it? I think it was Gary Harris.
Or maybe Monte Morris, one of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was funny. He looked as healthy as he's looked in a long time, and that was nice. It's funny. I don't think people realize Looney's younger than Oubre and Wiggins. Like, not by a lot, but technically he's younger. And, you know, he's just such a smart defender. I kind of think Kerr might end up splitting up Looney and Draymond to have one of them on the floor at all times to anchor the defense when Draymond comes back. But, like, either way, he looked really good. And my big positive takeaway from the game was I think this team can be really good defensively. We didn't even get to the bench. Like Brad Wanamaker.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we will. We will. Yeah, yeah. Because I want to talk about Poole, right? We want to talk about Jordan Poole, Wanamaker, Bazemore. But let's – you just talked about the team being a top 10 defense. And I said top 12. I was like, the Miami Heat are a top 12 defense. I think Spo kind of put the pieces together and got them there. Do you think, Sam, realistically that they can be a top 10 defense? I think it's a reach. If they do, I think they're going to be fantastic.
I think they can, but I think that with the caveat of there's probably only four or five elite defenses and then seven or eight really good ones behind it. So, like, I really think the line of demarcation is, like, top five, and then that, like, 6 to 12 range is, like, tier two. I think they can be in that group with maybe upside.
That would be That would be. I mean, that's what you're talking about. You don't know. You really don't know because a lot of these guys, like, I don't think of Oubre and Wiggins as high IQ players defensively. Same with Paschal. But I thought the press was they broke out the press twice. I thought it was great. It reminded me of high school because we pressed in high school because we're a small Asian team. And they reminded me of, like, that team, except for this team's, like, athletic and Asians are not. So I thought that was hilarious.
I think it does kind of hit the, you know, you press – when you can't fall back on, like, IQ and everything as much. It's like, we just got to get into them because we may not be able to make 16 rotations to make the smart play. Cause that's, like, a lot to ask of a young defensive team. So, you know, play defense as an advantage, get up in them. Getting back to your top 10 that's defensive great. Point, I'm going to read you the top 10 defenses last year, just for reference. All right. One was Milwaukee. Two was Toronto.
Yeah, yeah.
Three was the Lakers. Four was Boston. Five was the Clippers. I think all those teams, maybe not Toronto because they lost a lot of guys, but at least the other four probably just have a defensive gear that it's unlikely that this Warriors team can get to. Maybe not, but like I think the Lakers have definitely shown that they have a gear above everyone. Yeah. The Clippers at times, maybe they'll do more this year because Ibaka is just such a big upgrade. Yeah. Boston might they added Tristan Thompson. That might also take them up. They clearly have the wing and perimeter defense working. And then after those teams, I mean it's like Indiana, OKC, Philly. Okay, Philly's pretty damn good. Brooklyn, Orlando, Miami, Chicago, Utah. What I'm saying is I'm not sure that a team anchored by a motivated Draymond with all this length and athleticism can't be on the same tier as Indiana, Orlando, the Heat, those type of teams next year. This coming year.
You're making a hell – that last point was great because – you're talking about motivation, and a lot of the issues with the last few teams defensively is that they just don't give a shit, as they should, as they shouldn't. But you got guys like Bazemore who came off the bench and looked like – I mean, I don't know. We're going to get to him, but like he looked incredible. Same with Wanamaker. And then you've got Oubre and Wiggins that look like they're playing for something, even though they're getting paid $15 to $30 million a season, right? Like that type of stuff. And then if you get Draymond Green to give a shit, which it seems like he will – then you got a team that's going to be playing 100% for the regular season. The last time they did that, Sam, was probably 2015-16.
I was going to throw this out there. By the way, shout out immigrant dad Joe Lacob saying, Oubre and Wiggins are 25. Now is the time for them to take that step. You know, he kind of put a lot of pressure on them when he was talking with Fitz. We're going to get into Fitz is just... I mean, that was one of the most spectacular broadcasts of all
special
time.
Special stuff.
But let's put that on the table. But, like, I think it's not lost on Oubre and Wiggins that the Warriors will trade them or move on from them if they don't kind of lock in and play up to their athletic capabilities. Wiggins just came from Minnesota where it's mostly like a dumpster fire most of his career, right? Last thing he wants is to be traded to, another dumpster fire sort of thing happen. Oubre's bounced around the league a little bit, right? Oubre is aware that this is the best team he's landed on in terms of the way they treat players, in terms of facilities, coaching. Obviously, Steph Curry's better than anyone he's ever played with. Shout out Joe Lacob saying he's just better.
Yeah, that was impressive. That was a hell of before we go there, the motivation stuff is huge. I think it's huge because a team that like as much as Steph can say, this is the leadership stuff, right? That you get from Iguodala and Livingston and David West and a lot of those veterans. As much as Steph can say he's going to come and play 100%, a lot of the times it doesn't. It's like Steph is always going to play hard. Like he's always going to be there, but. You need to get the rest of guys to be on that same level. So I don't know what Steph is doing behind the scenes. Maybe it's Steph. Maybe it's Steve Kerr. Maybe we throw him some credit too. But a team with players that you sometimes feel may not play as hard as they want or can, especially like Andrew Wiggins, that was fun to see, especially for a game that it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like a first preseason game against the Denver Nuggets doesn't matter. But they treated that thing like it was a playoff game. It felt like they were playing like it was a playoff game. Honestly.
Yeah, and I mean, Steve Kerr will talk about how important chemistry and everything is, and the Warriors have a lot of success with chemistry. The first championship doesn't happen without kind of like this next level of chemistry that you don't see in the NBA very often, right? And because of that, they got KD to come here, and it slowly kind of wore down over time. Yep. But this really did look like the 2012-13 Warriors where you're like, I know Steph's good. I don't really know what's going on with the other players, but there's something going on here that's interesting. I just want to bring up one quote. Kent Bazemore, and part of the reason I think they signed him was because Bazemore is one of those vets who's going to kind of keep the attitude positive and keep everyone moving. He says, after the game tonight, we've got 95% of the team in the weight room lifting. We've got a lot of guys who just love to get after it. The practices have been intense. I don't want to read too much into that, but like I think it was visible when you watched the Warriors last night. Like I don't think they pretend they're the most talented team. I don't think that they're under some illusion that they're the most talented team. I think they know they can do some things well and they have to outwork people. And it really does have those early Mark Jackson years vibes to it where you're just like, I don't know how good this team's going to be, but I know they got something. I know they got the right kind of guys.
Yeah, that's not probably, we actually probably didn't even talk about that enough. Were the positive vibes in the first of all, Jimmy Butler vibes with the Ken Bazemore lifting after the game.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Enjoyed that. But the positive vibe stuff is huge because you never, as great as David West and Iguodala and those vets are, they weren't like a rah-rah type of team. It was more of like a let's keep this shit together.
Right.
so that we can make it to the postseason, win a title type of team, right? With this team is you don't need that. Like, you don't need that. There's no – Kyle Oubre is not coming out there and he's not talking about
– Oubre doesn't need to save his body for June 20th.
Yep. There's none of that stuff. It's more of a get these guys in a mindset to play hard every single game and stay positive even when this team is going to lose like 3 games out of 5 kind of thing. So
right.
That's what Bazemore is there for. That's what Wanamaker is there for. And it's also good that those guys can play. Like, they have Zaza and Livingston on the bench. And those guys are there teaching the players. But it's not the same as guys in the locker room. And that's stuff that I don't think we saw last season. Like, Alec Burks wasn't that guy. Glenn Robinson wasn't that guy. And we didn't see that the season before. Like, Quinn Cook is a fun guy, but he wasn't playing. He was also terrible. Right? So it's like, it's cool to have players that can play and be that positive reinforcement on the bench.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the next thing, which is going to be the thing that that kind of moves everyone forward here. The teammates, the second biggest take I had from the game was their teammates are not used to playing with Steph Curry in any capacity. Like, we saw Andre Iguodala like that tweet of Eric Paschal gets the ball in the corner. Steph is wide open on the elbow wing area, and he just jacks it up. And, you know, if that was Iguodala or Draymond, they immediately swing it to Steph because they know Steph open behind the three-point line is better than them open behind the three-point line. It's easy to forget that, you know, just because Steph is one of the best on and off-ball players does not mean there isn't a learning curve to understanding how to play with him, because so much of what he does is improvisational. And if you're not on the same level as him, you'll miss it.
Do you think, number one, how long do you think it's going to take for them to get there? Start there. Like, to a place where, no, not the same as it was in 2016, 17, 18, et cetera, but to a point where Steph is effective enough off the ball where they can keep playing him off the ball. It's going to take months, weeks.
I think at
the
least,
whole damn season.
I think at least weeks. I think it's unlikely that any team will ever be able to do like the ping, ping, ping passing the way that the Warriors did like 4 or 5 years ago. Like, that doesn't happen. You don't get the kind of guys who can make that many reads, have played 100, you know, 200 games together regularly. But like, in terms of the basic stuff, like that one play, Steph is open 5 feet away from you. Like, that's stuff that like Eric Paschal or Andrew Wiggins or someone like that should be able to get after they play like 5 to 10 games or so. Okay. You know, like, that's like the basic reads. Like, I catch the ball, if Steph is open, swing instead of just, you know, looking for my own shot, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I do think some of that should come over time. The other aspect of it was just timing. Like, guys throwing passes to where they thought guys would be or not.
That's just
preseason. That's just exactly what you expect.
Steph had some ugly passes where he was obviously forcing it a little bit. But that's fine. Like, he's always going to do that. And I do think it's going to take a week or so to get him back in rhythm there. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it'll take a few weeks for them. I don't think they'll get to a phase where you've got Andre Iguodala like mind melded with Stephen Clay.
Right.
Where he's like dribbling and then all of a sudden, boom, he gets a pass to those guys in the corner. I don't think we'll get there. But the easy stuff, swinging the ball, finding Steph in transition. There were a few plays where it was obvious that Steph was giving the ball away to get the ball back off another screen. And Looney knows whether to set that screen. I think Chris even knows to set that screen because he's played that big position before. But I don't think that someone like Oubre or Wiggins even or Paschal knows that when Steph's giving it up, it's not that he's giving up for you to do your own thing. he's giving it up so that he can set the defender up for like a flare screen, right? Or a cut to the basket or something like that. So that may take, yeah, a few weeks to get there. I don't think Oubre and Pascal and Wiggins are dumb players. They're just not Iguodala, so that it may take like a month or a few weeks to get there. But yeah, I'm not too concerned unless I'm seeing these same issues by midseason.
Yeah, Steve Kerr said this. He goes, it takes time. Curry is so unique. There's nobody like him in the NBA. Yep. Nobody can play on and off ball at the level and create that much havoc. I think with most players who come in, they're not used to the second half of the possession. They're used to whatever the pattern is in the beginning. But whenever Steph gives up the ball, that's when the action really starts. That's the way we play. That's the tricky part. He's right. Most people are used to playing James Harden dumbed down basketball where it's pick and roll, shoot it if you get the ball. That's it. So I actually think this is what Andre Iguodala was talking about when he said the game's getting dumbed down.
I also think you made a good point with the James Harden stuff because I don't think it's just James Harden. Let's throw
no. He's just a poster child for it.
Even like Dame, right? Who's like kind of the guy that ESPN had him ranked against above Steph. And it's like, you play with Dame, even Dame doesn't play off ball. So it's like, it's easier to play with Dame. The thing about Steph is he's just as good on ball as he is off ball that people think it's a knock on Steph, right? That, oh, if he's not playing well and he's off ball, it's
there
a bad
isn't, thing. There is an irony to somehow people don't think he's the most all-around player when I would argue he's by far the most all-around player in the NBA. Like, can Russell Westbrook do anything he can do off ball?
Fucking chance.
No, not James Harden. No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So it's like, I think when people say all around, what they're really saying is like just padding, counting stats. Like you get a lot more, like there, can they set a screen? Can they drag defenders? Can they deke a defender when they're off ball and get themselves open? I don't know about that, you know? So that stuff just comes over time though.
And the Steph slow start stuff, by the way, I will say this because he only had 10 points and he didn't shoot much. If Steph wanted to shoot 15 times yesterday, 20 times yesterday, he probably would have scored 30 points. That's not what's going to make this team. That's not going to fulfill the potential of this team. Like, they need Steph to play like as who Steph is in his entire career. If he's going to change who he is now and become a ball dominant 30 shot a game guy, they're not going anywhere. Like, they're not going anywhere outside of like a 6 seed or like an 8, 7, 6 seed. They're not winning more than that, right? If Steph can play off ball like he is before and he can get the teammates to find him, they have a chance to get past the first, second round. So I don't see the reason why he needs to do that.
Also, he took 10 shots in 20 minutes. It's not bad. You how much have you watched Steph over the years? He goes 2 for 10 in his first 10 shots, and then he hits a couple in a row and he ends the game 11 for 20. Like, it's just the way he plays. I'm not really concerned about his shot making. I wasn't concerned with him missing shots in like the little he played last year. I've watched Steph miss shots 5 games in a row and then literally get hotter than any human ever for the next 10 games. Yeah, you know, like it's my concerns with Steph would be if he showed actual physical decline. But I didn't see any of that last night. I saw a dude who was trying to get his teammates going, and were dealing with the fact that, you know, none of them have played together. Like, look, there's a big difference. I'm watching the Nets game here, and all it is Kyrie trying to show his new moves off, you know? And that's just a difference in mentality. Kyrie's like, I haven't played in 9 months, and I need to show you all these hezzy dribbles and moves I got. Steph's like, I haven't played in 9 months and I need to figure out how to get my teammates going. That's just a fundamental difference. There's value to both of it, by the way. There's value to like Kyrie being good. That dude. But like, it's, you know, it is what it is.
God, that's good. Also, you talked about the Nets. I was literally going to talk about KD. He's not KD. KD can just come on the court after he tore a freaking Achilles and look like he's Kevin Durant. Like, Steph is not that guy. He's not the guy. Give him a little time. Like you said, he wants to get his teammates involved because he knows that in order to win a goddamn championship, you need everybody to be great. You need even LeBron James needs people around him to be great. And that's
– I'll take it a step farther. I think if the Warriors try to play just high pick and roll with Steph, you're going to get a worse version of Oubre and Wiggins and Draymond, and they won't make the playoffs. This isn't a team that's really designed to have those guys spot up. I mean, can you imagine that? Just – Oubre spotting up and going 2 for 10 from 3. Like, do you want to watch that? It's not the way to get them. Like, this roster has my third take, which we're going to talk about later, was they have some shooting issues. And, you know, it's not going to help if they just try to have those guys space around the 3-point line.
Okay.
It's only going to be worse.
Let's talk about now, because the pick and roll stuff yesterday was fine. They ran a few pick and rolls, but it's not going to work without Draymond. It's just, they got Kevon Looney trying to make plays, right? They got some guys that are trying to make that secondary action where they throw two or three at Stephanie's open. I never want to see Kevon Looney kind of make that play. That's Draymond's bread and butter. Go to the rim, give it down to Wiggins, Oubre, whoever it is, make a play. That's an easy bucket, right? That's money. So they need him back for that. The shooting, the shooting is another story. Michael Mulder, Damian Lee, are shooters, but they're not players. They're not getting more than 10 minutes on this team in a game. The guys that are playing minutes,
and I don't know how they can. When you look at the roster, there's a lot of guys on the perimeter.
Yeah, they can't. They can't. Jordan Poole made shots too. So those guys are shooters. But as much as you want, as much as you're like happy those guys can shoot, Sam, it's up to Pascal, Oubre, and Wiggins to be able to shoot. And what did you think? Because Pascal shot an air ball on one of his first threes, which is funny.
Yeah, so now we're going to move to the negative portion. I don't even want to call it negative, but like the realistic portion is Oubre and Wiggins shot 3 for 12. They can shoot better. They've been historically inconsistent shooters, but their form's not broken. I think they can get that up to – I think they can both shoot 35% from three.
Yeah,
maybe Oubre can shoot a little better. I kind of like his shot a little more than I like Wiggins. Wiggins just hesitates and loves to make a shot more difficult, basically, is what it comes down to. But Pascal, I didn't see anything in terms of shot form that made me feel a little more confident about it. Did you?
No. But the rest of Pascal's game was fantastic. So,
oh yeah, totally.
It was fantastic. But yes, we are in the shooting threes portion of the podcast, and no, I wasn't too enthused about what I saw from Eric Pascal. Is what it is. Give him a couple more games. But if he is who he is last season, then you know what can you do? We didn't expect him to be a 35% three-point shooter. If he can get to 32, it'd be fun. Doesn't look like he's a 30% ish kind of guy. But man, that mid-range looks good. The shot looks good. The defense looks good. I mean, the shot getting to the hole looks good, right? Yeah, maybe
his
maybe
it's funny. His form doesn't look weird when he's at that like 15-foot range.
It's beautiful. It's money. It's money at 15.
I really don't get it. Like, usually guys who are pretty money from 15 to 20 can eventually stretch their form to three.
I think it's because he's just jumping too high. He can do that. He can do that from mid-range. But when you're doing that from 20, you know, from three-point range, it's too far.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, but it's something we need to track, because – if they can't shoot from deep, it's going to severely limit their ceiling. Yeah. I don't think either you or I are under any sort of illusion they're going to be a great shooting team. We're looking for them to be league average from three. If they can get as a unit to league average, I'll be happy.
You had a good stat. You had a tweet about a good stat about this team, because I did feel like they shot a million threes in the first 6 minutes of the game.
Oh, they did.
I don't know how I felt about that, but I think you had some numbers around the percentages of kind of like what they need to get to if they're going to shoot 40 plus threes
again. Yeah, so I'll pull those up for those who didn't see it. One, the starting unit took 22 threes and only 18 twos. I think some of that was just early game rust, not knowing how to kind of make the extra pass to get a layup. Hopefully that changes, but they went 5 for 22 from 3 and 11 for 18 from 2. 11 from 18 from 2 is over 60%. I'll take that, right? 5 for 22 from 3 is under 25%. I would like to return that to the store, to be honest. So that's not great. But we'll see what happens. I think a lot of that was just like not being comfortable in the offense, but being good in transition. To your point on my shooting stat, I mentioned this on the pod before. If Steph takes 12 threes a game, which I think he will, I assume he's going to make 5. 5 is about 41%, right?
Yeah.
Can Steph shoot 41% from 3? I think so.
Not bad.
If they take about 35 as a team and the rest of the team shoots 33%, that works out to about 36%, which would put them at what league average was last year. What I'm getting to is I need the rest of the team to be in the mid-30s and Steph to do his Steph thing, and I think they'll be a league average team. It would be nice to have someone shoot 38, 39, 40%, but like realistically, I will take like Wiggins, Oubre, Pascal, these dudes being like 35, 36%, and Steph just taking a bunch of shots, and I think that'll work.
I think that's realistic also. I don't think you're not asking Kelly Oubre to get to 38%. And I think they got open shots. We saw yesterday that Oubre and Wiggins got open shots. And throughout a course of the season, unless these guys are like mental midgets and they're not like they choke, right? What's his name? Omri Caspi. And they're suddenly unable to shoot the damn basketball. Like, I don't think we're getting that from guys like Wiggins and Oubre. And then, you know, Bazemore is streaky. He got one of them good streaks yesterday, but he'll have up and down games. We should probably talk about that, but I think they'll get there. I think they'll get there maybe a little bit lower. I would err on the side of Sam that they'll probably be like at the 34% ish, maybe a little bit lower than that, 33, if I had to be realistic about it. But yeah, I think they're good enough. I think they're good enough offensively to get there. And I think we were also missing Draymond Green, who's someone that can get those guys even better shots. Right, like I'm really excited to see Draymond on offense because we think of him on defense, but he's also someone that can get guys passes. And as fun as it was to watch the wings last night, the new wings, and I think of wings as Pascal, Oubre, Wiggins, Draymond is the one that can get people open shots. So it'd be good to get him back.
And you noticed him missing when like no one was able to make the extra read, no one was in the middle of the court making the extra pass. So I think they'll you know, when he comes back, it'll be good. Doesn't sound like we're gonna see him in preseason. There was one other thing negative thing I have to say about the first game, and that's the center position. I'm not in love with the depth they have right now. Obviously, Wiseman and Draymond being out is the most important thing. Looney looked excellent. Marquese Chris looked awful. Smiley Geach still looks unplayable. I mean, he's just a sideshow at this point. And I just wonder about that depth at the center position because, I mean, okay, Jokic is one of the 2 to 3 best centers in the league. He got whatever he wanted, even though he wasn't even trying. But he's going to get what he wants against most teams, right? So I don't know. It does feel like center is going to be something we have to monitor, and maybe they really should look at someone like Deadmond adding to it. I don't know how much of a difference it makes, but it was somewhat of a weakness for me.
Yeah, it was. It was. No, not somewhat. It is a weakness, and not just because it's Nikola Jokic, who doesn't matter if the Warriors had Deadmond, or honestly, didn't matter if they had Mark fucking Gasol. He would have feasted. He's that good now. I love Jokic. I'm watching Isaac Okoro, Patrick Williams, and Denny Avdija highlights, Sam. Not bad. James Wiseman, let's see what he looks like when he plays, right, in a couple weeks, because some of these guys in this NBA draft look pretty good. Again, it's just one game, but they look pretty good. So with regards to the center position,
you didn't throw in Tal Rubio?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of Tal Rubio.
Those passes are very sexy.
Yeah, congratulations.
But I do think it's hilarious how no one mentions the 0-for-5. And
it'll nuke a career if you can't shoot. It's very simple. Like, look at Markel Fultz, right? It's that simple.
Or just Ricky Rubio.
at least Rubio.
It just puts a huge ceiling. Like, Rubio's fine. But like, if he's gonna be a tall Rubio, like I'm not gonna be upset that they pass.
And Rubio can play. And Rubio can play defense.
That's true.
Like LaMelo Ball, in no way do we think LaMelo Ball even gives a shit or will actually pay. We're not doing this right now. But the center position, I don't think there's anything they can do. Like, what can they do outside of people keep saying Deadmond? Fine. They signed Deadmond.
I think you're right. I think if they do anything about center, it'll be a midseason trade. I think if we get to like late January and Wiseman just, the COVID has just set him back so much that like we got to be realistic. Like, it's just mean to ask him to do too much now, right?
Yeah.
Looney's good, but like Looney kind of has, you know, only 20 minutes a game in his legs. Then maybe they go in the trade route because like the weird thing about this Warriors team is like I don't see any minutes for Damian Lee or Michael Mulder. And I feel like they could play. They can help the team. Like they actually have
Jordan Poole, honestly.
They actually have a decent amount of depth along the perimeter. It's not perfect, but they definitely have guys that other NBA teams would like along there. So I could see potentially if we're like in late January and it's just very clear that like we need to like slow our roll on Wiseman because COVID set him back so much, then they go the trade route, you know, to try to get a vet in there.
It's also unfair to put Wiseman in that situation. We're not like Washington doesn't expect any Avdija to be a fucking 25
a starting wing on a playoff
in a playoff team. Yeah. I mean, come on. Even if Washington makes the playoffs, which I think they will at 8 or 7, it's like they're an 8 or 7 seed in the East. Like the Warriors may make the playoffs at an 8-7-6, but like they're legitimately better than the Washington Wizards. So it's like I think it's unfair. And I think if you put Wiseman on a team that he could have played 30 minutes, it'll probably put up numbers too. Like he'll be fine. So yeah, I'm with you. So end of the day, it comes down to Chris didn't look great, in my opinion. Say he didn't look great. But again, it's one game. Looney's fine. And then it comes down to Draymond Green, right? It comes down to can he be motivated enough to play that 5? And on top of that, can Pascal play the 4? Because it looked like last night he could play the 4. But like for me, it looked like he could play the 4. But so, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Okay, I want to – we have a couple things to get to. Then we will bring Wes on to discuss what it was like to be in Chase last night. Jordan Poole looked excellent, in my opinion. I think, you know, it's one game. The same way Steph missed all his shots from deep, Jordan Poole made all his shots. So, you know, you can't read too much into the shot making. But one thing I did like about him was how much more controlled and comfortable he looked. You and I have both heard he's been kind of dominating workouts all summer, and he had been the guy. I mean, Fitz said it, but he'd been known before. He'd been kind of the number one guy at all the workouts over the summer, and I never know how serious to take that stuff. He is young, but he looked a lot more like the player we were hoping they would get when they drafted him as opposed to the player who had a terrible rookie year.
As someone that does not believe in him and did not believe in him for, I think, the last few months, I will say, you know, about 6 months ago that I think what last season did for Jordan Poole is that it's given him the experience to say, this is the bottom. Like, this is the bottom and this is what NBA players look like. I now know what to do, right? And if he's gotten better as a player, which I'm skeptical about, then he's going to be that much better. There were a few plays, and just that one play that he made where he had the ball in the wing. He drove to the middle of the paint. Then he pump faked and shot like an 8-foot fadeaway and nothing but net, right? Like that little play right there told me like, damn, like last season was that play was like an out of control, like go to the hoop, left-hand, wild left-hand layup that goes over that backboard kind of bullshit. That play right there told me like, damn, like he might it's like the classic
game slowing
cliche.
Down.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Classic cliche. Like they get, which is like, damn, I'm watching the game like, I hope I'm wrong, Sam. And I hope I'm wrong. Yeah. And if he's a player that can shoot 37, 38% from three, yesterday's shot looked great. And if he can get to the hole and then he can guard ones, man, yeah, he's playing ahead of Lee and Mulder, like 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he looked excellent. Finally.
Finally.
We got to discuss my guy, Bob Fitzgerald, the best in the business. The absolute best in the business. That interview with Joe Lacob was, I mean, the CCP is envious of the propaganda campaign he was running. That was next level. That was, I don't even think, I mean, peak Soviet Union can't do that sort of stuff. I got people like texting me about stuff he's saying. They're like, hey, I think Smiley's good. I'm like, did you watch the game? Or were you just listening to Bob tell you about how good it was that he knew how to drive and get his dunk blocked? Like, it was just amazing.
It was, as I get older, I think I appreciate Fitz more, Sam. I truly think I appreciate Bob Fitzgerald more as I get older.
The ultimate company man.
I used to get annoyed. I think growing up, I didn't think too much of it. You're a kid. What do you know? And I didn't mind it.
And they sucked. And so it was annoying to have him just like lie to you about stuff.
And you know, now as I watch it more and more, it's all in the entertainment, man. I don't think there's necessarily anything harmful that the guy is doing. And I'm watching a broadcast and people are like, you can watch it on mute, etc. But it's like, you know, I want to watch the game and I want to be entertained by the guy that's talking. And I think Fitz has gotten to a point where if you don't take Fitz seriously, if you don't think that he actually means what he's telling you, that Alan Smiley Geach is the next Davis Bertans, then you're just going to enjoy what he's talking about. I want to hear you talk about Joel Akub, which was fantastic. Joel Akub, I think is a genuinely relatively likable guy. I think was
likable if you're a Warrior fan. That's
hilarious watching Smiley Geach because we tend to roast Kurt and Kent a lot. But Joel Akub loves the guy too. Joel Akub loves the guy.
He stood up when Smiley took the three, I nearly lost it. That was the funniest thing I'd seen in a long time. I mean, beyond that, I appreciate, like, you can tell Joel Akub had been coached by Raymond Ritter to not overreact to certain comments. Like when he's talking about like how he wants to get fans in the arena, you know, like if Joe was uncensored, he'd be like, the city of San Francisco, we got to do this. What's wrong with them? And he like clearly took a breath. He's like, yeah, it's difficult and we're just trying.
He, which is funny because that's what he did on the TK pod. He literally went off on San Francisco, which, you know, a lot of it was fair. He seems – the UA mask sent me, though. Like, the guy had an Under Armour mask on. That had me rolling. Shouts to Steph for
– Oh, the man knows he needs that extension sign immediately. Joe's whining and dining. It reminds me of when KD didn't sign the extension and he did – you remember at ring ceremony? He's like, hey, here's a pen. You want to sign that type of thing? And I was just, like, losing it. I mean – he's you don't get that successful at business if you don't have to close a deal. I'll just put it
out there. It was a fun game. It was a fun broadcast. It was this team's going to be fun to watch. I really didn't have anything. I kind of didn't have anything bad to say about anything. It did suck to see no fans at Chase. Chase looks fantastic as ever. I know you and I have been quite a few times. Shouts to Fitz. I am curious to see what he says this season. You know, because I do think one of the players of Wiggins, Pascal, and Oubre is going to be like a bigger leap, right, than the other guys. Not just a mini leap, but a big leap. I want to hear it. I'm waiting for
– Yeah, yeah.
I'm waiting for the Wiggins.
It's unrealistic to think everyone's going to take a leap, but yeah. One player will, for sure.
I want to hear him say that's the best wing combo in the league. You know what I mean? Like, I just want – I want to hear him talk about
It was preseason for the players, but Fitz was in playoff form. I mean, the dude said Chase was the safest place in the world yesterday. He's like, with the testing gone here, there's no place safer on earth than the Chase Center. And I was just like, did he really just say that?
You know what I'm gonna do? You know what we're gonna do, Sam, is we're gonna put together each game. I'm just gonna write down in our prep doc, just like a quote.
Fitz take of the week.
Yep, like a Fitz take of the week. Like this week, it's that he said Chase Center is the safest place in America. Like next week, what are we gonna hear? Andrew Wiggins is better than Jason Tatum. Andrew Wiggins and Oubre are better than Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Like that's the shit I like to hear. It's energetic.
The first Celtics game, he's gonna start alluding to how there's no difference between the two of them. So
yeah, you're right.
All right. Football and basketball. Let's change it up. Bet Online, basketball is back in full swing. Are you kidding me? We got the Warriors. We got KD play tonight. The Lakers and Clippers. I mean, God, it's going to be a fun season. So you might not be at a game this year. I know Chase is not allowing him for now. But you can still be on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win this season. Game spreads, totals, team, player, coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today. Season starts in 10 days. Start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of the great sign-up bonuses. Blue Wire. BetOnline.ag. Blue Wire, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses around the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates and quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it in fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Best offer available anywhere. Go right now. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
And now, special guest from the Mercury News, Wes Goldberg. Wes, how you doing?
I'm good. Good news is I tested negative for the coronavirus, courtesy of the Warriors. So feeling pretty safe, feeling pretty good about myself.
Yeah, so naturally after the game, you went out and like hit up every like secret underground club because you knew you were negative right now.
That's right. Yeah.
No, tell us about the testing protocol. Everyone's aware that, you know, Joe Lacob presented this plan to the city of San Francisco in hopes of having, you know, 50,000 or 50% of the fans in there.
50,000.
But yeah, 50. I mean, if he could, I'm sure he would. But, sure. But you're kind of the inaugural people to go through this testing program. So tell us what it was like.
Surprisingly efficient, I would say. It was pretty pain-free. I don't know if you guys have done a coronavirus test maybe like a few months ago when all this first started. I remember I got one and it was that giant noodle of a swab that
I've done that one a handful of times.
Yeah, where it goes right up to your brain and really gets to know you.
Oh, I've never done that one. Jesus.
Yeah, it was really, it's like super uncomfortable. And I was not looking forward to doing that again just to go cover this game with absolutely no access, but it wasn't like that. It was pleasantly more not as intrusive, just sort of at the bottom of the nasal cavity there. And so you kind of go through this test really quick, and then you go into this waiting room type deal, outdoor waiting room, for about 45 minutes until they come back to you with your test. You get like a text alert. They say, hey, your results are ready. Then you go back down to the room where you got the test. They hand you a little business card sized card. Nobody looks at it. They just hand it to you so that you're not in invading privacy rules or whatever. And then it says whether or not you tested negative or positive, and you read it. And if you tested positive, I guess you go home. And if you tested negative, you go into the media entrance. And so they outlined the entire procedure pretty quickly and efficiently. It happened within, I would say, an hour between me getting there. I got there at like 2:30. I was in the arena by 3:30, and they had you wear masks the entire time. And I felt good about it. You know, I hadn't seen all these dirty media members in a really long time, but I felt pretty safe.
Who had the worst mask? Tell us it was Ethan. No, just kidding.
Gotta be Ethan. Gotta be.
What I was actually going to ask was, where'd they have you guys sitting? Were you in the media section, or because you have a gigantic arena, did they spread you out in the seats and everything?
The top of the lower bowl on the 50-yard line, basically.
Nice. See, it's like two seats apart or something.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, COVID giving media the good seats. You know, before when it was the fans in the arena, we were stuck in the corner, or you were stuck in the corner, like behind the backboard kind of thing. So you're 50. Wow.
Well, let's not go overboard. They weren't good seats. I still couldn't hear anything. They were piping in crowd noise. For some reason, they
could hear that.
They played We Are the Champions on loop at the end of the game when we were trying to conduct Zoom interviews. It was a little strange, but I don't know. I think they were trying to do like a test thing. I don't think they were like celebrating beating the Nuggets in the first preseason game, but maybe they were. So I wouldn't go as far as to say that they're great seats. We're still pretty far away from what was actually happening, but it definitely, like you said, beats this weird corner of the Chase Center type deal. We at least got to see both sides of the court for once, which was nice.
They piped in crowd noise, huh? How was that?
So I have a theory that you should not be allowed, and I thought about this with the NFL when you're watching a Miami Dolphins game. And the crowd noise is like extremely loud, and it's louder than it's ever been for 30 years for Miami Dolphins game. You should not be allowed to pipe in crowd noise louder than what your average live crowd was the previous season. And unfortunately for the Warriors, if they were to pipe in crowd noise and try to compare that to Oracle, would not have even been close, right? This artificial crowd noise on Saturday. But last night's crowd noise was definitely louder than what it was a majority of the time at Chase Center in San Francisco. And I thought that was, I think that's cheating and teams should not be allowed to do that.
I didn't hear anyone ask this question. Maybe they did, but have the players talked about how they feel about the fake crowd noise and the no fans thing? Because I think this is different than the bubble. Because the bubble, you know, you have smaller court, artificial walls. Like it really works in terms of what they were trying to accomplish. This is like baseball, where you're like, well, playing in this massive stadium that's empty.
We've asked the players a lot about that, but they give you the same media friendly answer in that it's going to be weird, but we're professionals and it's our job, so we're going to do it anyway. And I hate that answer because it is weird and it's my job and I'm there anyway covering the game. But I can tell you that it's really freaking weird and that the crowd noise was uncomfortable. Like, just, I wish a player would just come out and say that and just say, you know what, I understand why we're doing it and it's the right thing to do and I get it, but it's weird to hear like the ghosts of fans of seasons past filling the bowels of this arena.
Yeah. So what about the game itself? Let's get your, I mean, Andy and I talked for at least a half an hour before he came on. But I'm curious, what were your takes, first impressions, first Warrior preseason game, obviously no Klay Thompson. What are your impressions of this team so far?
I think offensively it's going to be pretty clunky, but understandably so. You know, I think Steph Curry, we talk about Steph in a way that he's so easy to play with because he makes the game so much easier for everybody. And those two things are kind of exclusive of each other. He makes the game easier for everybody he plays with because of the spacing and all the things that we know about him. But he's really hard to play with. And that's not because he's a bad teammate, and it's not a negative thing. It's just because, I don't know if you guys have played like pickup in your life or whatever, but you if you've ever played with a guy who's just a little bit off the regular rhythm, there's a natural pace to games. There's a natural like spacing. There's a natural geometry to things. One of the things that makes Steph so dangerous and so impossible to defend is because he takes all those rules and throws them away, and it's just, he's impossible to defend. And because he's so unpredictable with all the relocation and all those things that he's supposed to do. But if you're Andrew Wiggins or Kelly Oubre or Eric Paschal or Brad Wanamaker, you've never played with a player like that, not just in your NBA career, but probably in your entire life. And that's hard. It's hard to understand where you need to be when Steph is in one corner and 2 seconds later, he's on another part of the court and you can't be in his zone. You can't be in his space. So you need to learn how to move off of Steph, just as Steph is able to create space for you. And I think you're going to see this team take a lot of games in a few weeks to really sort of learn that chemistry with Steph Curry. And getting Draymond Green back is going to help that to a certain degree. But you know, if Brad Wanamaker is standing above the break on the left side and Steph Curry wants to run from the right corner all the way around the arc, Brad Wanamaker needs to know to get the hell out of the way, you know? And
I think that's a great point.
That just takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And we were debating how long that would take. I think we settled on like it may take a month, you know, a few weeks for these guys to get ready. It would be a concern if it took longer than that. I think if it was a few months in, maybe even like almost mid-season, and this team kind of still doesn't know what Steph wants to do, I think then we have a problem. But I don't know if we think that these guys, they aren't high IQ. I wouldn't say Wiggins and Paschal and Oubre are high IQ, but I don't think they're low IQ either.
No, I think it's going to be different for everybody too. I think for the wings, it's going to be a little bit easier. For guys like Wiggins and Oubre, you know, their jobs of finding off-ball screens and then cutting to the basket off of those screens are going to be much easier than, say, a guy like James Wiseman, for example. I think it could take him a minute because he's the guy that actually has to set screens for Steph Curry, or even more difficult, those sort of secondary staggered screens and things like that. That's hard. And I think it was pretty telling that Steph Curry basically had to create all his own shots Saturday night, but a couple of the shots he did make were off of Kevon Looney screens. And Kevon Looney's not a playmaking center by any stretch, but he at least knows where to set the screen for Steph, which is complicated enough, right? To learn a player's tendencies and to learn that kind of pick and roll game. And so I thought that two-man game was something that Steph Curry was comfortable with early on. And a lot, like I said, a lot of his points came off of that. So I think for guys like Wiseman and Paschal, who's going to be involved in the pick and roll game a little bit, it could take a little bit longer. And by the way, that's why Marquese Chriss is on this roster, is because he seemed to have just a natural understanding and feel for playing with Steph. And he showed that in the preseason last year and ended up earning a roster spot relatively quickly. So that's an important thing for this team. But I think, you know, I would be concerned mostly with Wiseman in regards to playing with Steph in that way. But they're going to have to find a balance of getting this number two pick to strike a balance with the most important player on the team and also trying to win games and not sabotage minutes early.
Has Kerr given any new indications to when we're going to see Wiseman? Obviously, he's cleared the initial stage of the COVID protocol. Now he's doing individual workouts, but doesn't sound like he's going to play in the preseason. And yeah, I guess, what do we know?
That he said it's unlikely he plays in any of these next two games in Sacramento.
Great.
And he is close to return. I mean, I don't understand really what the rules are, because you're allowed to wear a mask and rebound in warmups, but you Very can't weird. Actually do anything. I don't really understand what the league protocol is. But
no, that doesn't make sense. They're
making
to me
that
either.
Shit up on the fly.
It almost seems like they're using an excuse to slow play him getting into team practices.
That might be fair.
I don't know. So.
I think we'll see him early in the regular season, but I would doubt that they throw him into the fire again. I mean, consider that the first two games are against Brooklyn and Milwaukee. I don't think they're going to be like, hey, welcome to the NBA. Go guard Giannis.
Go guard, yeah.
have or fun. Like, yeah, hey, go match up with Kevin Durant playing small ball five tonight. Have fun with that. But then the next two games are against Chicago and Detroit. I could see maybe him getting more minutes in those games, if maybe getting right. a few minutes
that's
garbage time when they're losing by 15 against Milwaukee on Christmas. But maybe get
I don't know. Milwaukee's a fucking mess. He's not signing that thing, baby.
doesn't mean they can't roll him, though. But with that said, let's talk about Oubre and Wiggins. I think what Andy and I were talking about, one of our biggest takes from the first game was there was a decent amount of defensive intensity for a preseason game. Like, all that talk they'd been doing about being a top 10 defense and really getting after it, we'll see if it translates, but they're definitely committed to trying. It didn't look like a team who's going through the preseason motions. It looked like a team with some semblance of urgency to know they had to work at it.
I was really impressed by Kelly Oubre's aggressiveness in particular. That full court, and then this clip has kind of made the rounds on social media, but him picking up Jamal Murray in the full court and just being a pest. You love to see that kind of stuff. They're going to have to figure out how to balance, though, being a little bit too aggressive and just playing straight man-to-man defense sometimes. I think that this year, we keep talking about how their offense is going to have to score points early and how this is going to be a fast pace, but their defense is going to have to get stops early in the shot clock too. That shot clock is just as important to them on defense as it is on offense, because they're not going to get a ton of shot clock, stops, right? They're not going to stop them in a 24-second shot. They're going to have to win, maybe get a deflection.
This isn't a veteran team with a bunch of old guys who know how to do like 10 rotations in a row.
Exactly. And so you're going to need guys, specifically Wiggins and Oubre, to jump those passing lanes and do those things. And I thought Denver was an interesting test for that, because Nikola Jokic is maybe the best passer in the league at this point, and the best, I think, certainly at anticipating when defenses are going to lean a certain way or the other and taking advantage of that. And he picked them apart a few times, but I don't think he killed them either. So their length is going to be important. I've talked to maybe four or five coaches at this point about what they think defensively, and give them credit. I mean, they have a goal statement, right? They have a mission statement of, we're going to be a top 10 defense and our length and athleticism are going to help us do that. And every coach that I've talked to has basically said the same thing. So that's real. When you hear those quotes, they really do, at least, I don't know if they necessarily believe that they'll be a top 10 defense, but they're trying to be. And so I think and Wiggins and Oubre are going to be a big part of that, but it's going to be them trying to strike that balance of being aggressive, and it's going to be matchup dependent. I also thought it was pretty telling, last point on this, but that they started Kevon Looney. I think we were wondering who was going to be the starting center. I don't think it's because James Wiseman hasn't been in training camp. It's because, hey, if your number one priority is to be a top 10 defense, then start your best defensive player.
Starting a rookie center is not the way to do it. Yeah.
Or even Marquise Chris, who has a really good two-man game with Steph Curry. Like, if you want to open up this offense, you start Marquise Chris, not Kevon Looney. But I think they're less concerned about the offense, and they say you just need to be good at defense first and foremost.
Looney's the right move. But actually, I was going to ask about the starting center, because even if Wiseman was healthy and he didn't have COVID, he was in training camp, I don't think that matters for a team that sounds like they're going to have some center issues. Do they do anything? Like, what can they actually do about that? Because outside of, I guess Deadman's out there, I guess maybe you could trade for PJ Tucker if Houston's blowing it up. But it's like, what can they realistically do outside of like kind of rolling with what they got?
Not really anything, right? I mean, is Dwayne Dedman, do you guys remember Luke Babbitt?
Yes.
He was this 3-point floor spacing, like power forward, small ball four guy. There's, oh, you want to open up your offense? We'll put Luke Babbitt on the floor. And I watched a handful of Luke Babbitt games, and I don't think I've ever seen him make a 3-pointer. But he had this reputation of being a 3-pointer. And like you look at Basketball Reference and he shoots like 40% from 3-point range or something. But I swear to God, I've never seen him make a 3 in my life. He goes
kills
in
garbage time.
Yeah, he goes for 0-for-2 for like one rebound in 10 minutes a game. That to me is Dwayne Dedman. It's like he's got this reputation of being a floor spacing center, but I don't know that I've ever actually seen him hit a 3 in a real game on TV. And so I don't know what this – I get a lot of questions about Dwayne Dedman on Twitter, so I just wanted to say that and put that out there. But
that's fair.
I'm very skeptical that his 3-point shot is real. He had one season where he hit a few. But right.
Exactly.
But he is a semi-competent defensive big, which – I just don't know if like Wiseman's going to be slow played. I mean, maybe this is just PTSD of Looney's just continual list of injuries. But like, I mean, Smilegeach isn't ready to play, may never be. And Marquise Chris and Looney are kind of what they are, which is, you know, productive in smaller roles. Like at some point, I'm wondering, do they need another big just to have a body at this point?
No, I think they're going to roll with what they have. Look, you've got your defensive specialist in Looney. You've got your sort of I envision Looney is sort of the Zaza, Pachulia, Andrew Bogut type where he's your big seven, not necessarily 7 feet, but you know what I mean? He's your traditional sort of center. Marquise Chris is sort of the David West of this group where he's probably the best passer of the group. He's got probably the best touch out of the three.
Best offensive game overall.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you're going to have to carve out minutes for Wiseman at some point, and they're going to have to try. I think you'll see Looney start games, and for a majority of the first, I don't know, 6 minutes with Steph and when Draymond's out there, then you'll probably get Marquise Chris in there. When Steph and Draymond go out, I think you're going to see this bench trio emerge of Oubre, Wiggins, and Marquise Chris, a nice kind of fast-paced team. They're going to just try to out-sprint other bench units. And then James Wiseman will come in after that, when Steph and Draymond re-enter the game, and you'll get a few minutes there before with Wiseman before Kevon Looney comes back in the game. And that's still – I kind of worked out this rotation. That's why I'm kind of talking about it, because I mapped this out the other day. And that still leaves about 6 minutes per game for Draymond Green to play small ball center. So when you really need to go and win a game and you can't afford to mess around with this group, you just play Draymond at small ball 5, and then you have Wiggins and Oubre, and then maybe Kent Bazemore or Brad Wanamaker out there.
Do you think – because Warriors Twitter loves these young guys, especially Jordan Poole. Do you think any of these guys can actually play real minutes? And it's Jordan Poole, I'm thinking. Michael Mulder looked great, but it's like, how much can he really play? You know, Damian Lee, same thing with him. Because if I were to choose, I'm picking Wanamaker and Bazemore every single game, regardless of how well those guys play. And there's only so many minutes, unless Steve Kerr wants to fuck around and play 13 guys, which he might. But how realistic is it those guys actually play real minutes? Because it's cute to have Michael Mulder on the roster, but he's probably not going to play much in any regular season game.
By default, it'll be Bazemore and Wanamaker, right? But this team, to me, it was telling that this team took 43 pointers in their first preseason game.
Yeah.
And they made like 27% of them, which was bad, but it was good that they took 40 because they took 31 per game last year. So that's 9 more. And that's a really significant leap from one season to the next. But a big part of that was Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre going 3-for-12, you know, from 3-point range. And there are going to be nights where they can't afford to do that. And they're going to need to get some 3-point shooters out there. Michael Mulder is going to earn a spot on this roster because he's the second best 3-point shooter on this team right now with Klay Thompson out, which says a lot.
And like so, the 12th best player, which is like,
right. And he's going to be the sort of the nominal 15th guy on this roster.
Yeah.
But there are going to be nights where Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins are going 3-for-12 from 3-point range. And they're just saying, you know, we need to get somebody on the floor to space to get some shots to go down. And Mulder and Steve Kerr is going to look down the bench and say, Michael Mulder, go in. And he's going to leap Wanamaker and Bazemore and Poole and Damian Lee. Like that's, there are going to be nights where that happens. But, you know, and Jordan Poole has got that confident shot. We'll see if that actually translates to the NBA and stuff like that. I still think that Damian Lee is one of these guys who's reliable. He doesn't really take anything off the table. He's not going to screw things up. He's very much just like Kent Bazemore in that way. Kent Bazemore is slightly a better version of that. But there are going to be nights where these guys are just – like Bazemore has been hit and miss. He's been a streaky shooter his whole career. Brad Wanamaker's played in the league
for months. You're not putting Bazemore in there for spacing reasons. You're putting it in there because it kind of creates havoc.
So there are going to be nights where I think if it gets like it was last night where, you know, a lot of guys are taking threes but it's just not going and you need to find some shooting, you could see Kerr go 12 deep on this group and just be like, all right, which one of you guys has the hot hand? And then whoever ends up emerging that night will play the end of the games. And I think Warriors fans have gotten used to this idea of, hey, we know what the closing lineup is every night, right? It's going to be Steph, Clay, Iguodala, you know, Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, whatever that death lineup is. That's not going to be the case this year. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think you're going to have a mix and match every night type of deal.
Yeah, I'm almost looking at, I mean, the hope for Mulder would be something like, and I don't think he'll ever be this good, but like how like Bryn Forbes for the Spurs, like not a particularly, you know, he's somewhat limited player, but like his value to the Spurs is incredibly high because they just don't have shooting. They just need someone to throw in there because like Derek White, DeJounte Murray, DeRozan, all these guys can't shoot. And it's like sometimes you got to throw someone in there who can take, take them and make shots.
Yeah. Maybe Wes can shoot. Throw him in there.
I can't shoot. I'm a low post bruiser. I play.
Are
dirty.
You? How tall are you?
I'm not tall enough to be a low post bruiser. I'm 5'10", but I play bigger than my size. I'm kind of like PJ Tucker.
Okay, there you go. I mean, you can get the corner three going.
I get the quarter. So I'll take a 3-pointer early in every game. And if it goes in,
have them respect you. Yeah.
Yeah. If it goes in, I'm taking more. And if I miss it, I'm not shooting again for the rest of the game. And I'm just throwing elbows.
I can see Wes playing at the JCC. That's great.
Before we get out of here, let's end with this question. Obviously, they're playing the Kings on Tuesday and Thursday. What are you looking for? What are you watching for specifically in this condensed preseason and all around just weird year?
More of the same. I want to see the chemistry with Steph Curry continue to build. I think that's going to be so important. I thought it was interesting that Andrew Wiggins was the main ball handler in that first quarter to open the game. And he ended up having, I think, one assist and two turnovers. But I thought the eye test was friendlier to him than the box score was.
Right.
And so I want to see more of that. It'll be interesting to see if they put up the same rate of three-pointers. Kind of just, look, we identified some trends in that game and a lot of those trends we talked about here. Were those just a one-off instance or are they indeed trends? I think that's what we're going to see with these two games in Sacramento, if this is really how this team wants to play or if that was just a factor of them playing the Denver Nuggets and whatever that matchup resulted in. But that chemistry with Steph, you want to continue to see some springiness from Kevon Looney. I thought he had a nice game for them. And just continue to see like who on this bench emerges as the most trusted guy. I thought Kent Bazemore and Brad Wanamaker had moments, but I wasn't particularly impressed with them in that first game. And so you're going to want to see who kind of leaps off the page off that bench.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there were enough good signs to be optimistic about the Warriors, but enough kind of question marks to where you're like, okay, let's see if any of these young guys can kind of step up and take that mantle. Because I think the big one is too, is like, can Wiggins shoot? Can Oubre shoot? Because that is a lot of open shots, especially when Draymond's back. Like, especially when Draymond's back, even though he's not demanding defense, he's getting guys the ball. And that's right. Oubre and Wiggins. And if they're, you know, there was a play where Steph kind of drew a double after a crossover against Jokic and he gets Wiggins an open three and it's a clank. You know, I had a little Harry B PTSD, but is that going to be all season? We don't know.
And then Wiggins went out there and then I think two possessions after that hit a step back three from the corner.
Right.
And so I loved that. That's the stuff that you want to, I thought everybody played a little tentative in that first game and you want to see somebody that's not Steph Curry go out there and just say, you know what? This is my night. I'm going to go out there and just make this team mine.
It kind of has to be Wiggins though, right? Like it kind of,
or Oubre.
Yeah.
Yep. And so that's interesting. Wiggins, I think, has the skill set to be that second scorer. Because who's
but
the
Oubre
second?
Has the mentality.
But Oubre has the mindset.
That is, yeah.
And so that's going to be, to me, an interesting push and like kind of tug of war that happens. Is I think Wiggins will be more content to just say, hey, you really seem to want this. You can have it. Oubre is going to say, thank you very much. I don't care that maybe you're 4 for 5 in the first half and having a nice, like a rare efficient night, Andrew Wiggins. I'm going to keep shooting until I'm, instead of 1 for 12, now I'm going to be 2 for 13. Like, that's going to be my mindset. So I think it could be – that's going to be a dynamic, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Steve Kerr, can rein Oubre in on nights where he has that. I'm speaking about Oubre like I've watched every game of his career. I don't know that that's going to be the case, but just early on, that seems to be sort of his MO.
If they could meld those two guys together, I think it would be nice. They just put Oubre
– would it?
Yeah.
Like, how good of a player is that?
It could be awful the other way. But yes, theoretically, if you take the positive traits from both of them, yes.
It's like a longer, more athletic Deion Waiters.
Wow.
That's a little.
That's Anthony. That's Anthony. That's Anthony Edwards. All right. That's Sam. You had Sam.
No. We'll get out of here on this. I mean, I think we can all agree. They're a little more exciting than they were last year. I remember last year's preseason just being like, I mean, we were joking about it. It was like the sad boy tour. Like, everyone was just like, every post game press conference felt like a funeral. And it was just, you know, like, obviously the D'Lo thing didn't work out, but like, you know, Steph and Kerr and others definitely felt like it wasn't going to work out earlier than when the trade happened. So it's good to at least see that they're bought in, and you know, we'll see where they end by the end of the season.
I love my job. I love my job. I hated my job last year.
That was your first year on a beat, right? Like,
it was.
You got really thrown into the fire.
You got fucked.
Yeah. I got blamed for ever, because I was covering the Heat before that, and I leave my Heat duties and enter the Warriors universe.
Off of 5 finals.
They go 15-50, worst record in the league. The Heat go to the NBA finals. I heard about that a lot, not only on Twitter, but from friends and family. It was very hurtful.
Wow. Well, hey, here's one thing, okay? Here's one word of advice. Just don't say anything bad about Steph. You'll be fine in the Warriors universe.
And if they Twitter fall apart world. This year, we're going to trade you to L.A. That's
how
it's going to go.
There we go.
Wes, we appreciate you, man. Good stuff. Stay safe at the games, huh?
I will. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man.